Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello and welcome to SI's Daily Rings, our daily Olympics podcast. I'm Dan Gartland, here as always with Mitch Goldich. Mitch, what a day, packed day. We just finished the basketball game. It was a really, really good day. I'm looking forward to getting into it with you.
Yeah, felt like a different kind of day because in some ways there was less stuff going on just because so many of these tournaments where we've had days with like four quarterfinals, we're down to just the finals. And so in a lot of ways there was less stuff to follow. And then in some other ways, everything was more intense and there was a lot that I wanted to see. And so my notebook is full as always. And yeah, it felt like a full day. It's hard to believe we're already through it. The day flew by.
Yeah, it was kind of a front-loaded day, a lot of things early, and then they kind of cleared the runway for the men's basketball game to shine there at the end. And there was also not a whole lot going on in the middle of the day with the women's soccer. So I felt good, you know, I didn't have to be gold zone going back and forth trying to track multiple things at once as much as I was in previous days. So I got to foot. I watched the whole basketball game. I watched some weightlifting in the middle. So I really, like, I was locked in on that basketball game, and I'm glad I was because it was a hell of a game. A lot of fun. You know, so the U.S. beats France. It was a tight one. It was really, really close. Final score 98-87. And even that 9-point margin or 11-point margin seems, a little bit obscures how close it was because the U.S. kind of scored a few late baskets to get some breathing room. But otherwise, yeah, it was really close. Victor Wembanyama was amazing, but the U.S. just too talented and wins. What is it? Their seventh straight gold medal.
It's, every time since 2004 was the year when they fell short, and I think 8 out of 9. It's funny, I was thinking about this today. I never know how much attention to pay to basketball before the Olympics, because it feels like you want to spend more time shining the spotlight on some of these sports like track and swimming and gymnastics that get their time in the spotlight every 4 years, and some of these other sports, and then basketball is just kind of there, and it gets a lot of attention because, you know, basketball is very popular and these players are very, very famous. But sometimes you wonder, like, well, is this really worthy of all of our attention? And then they start playing the games and it's like, well, of course it is, because these players are amazing and it's so much fun and everyone loves basketball and it's so exciting. And it was so easy. Today was great, but also the semifinal, sort of thinking of them almost like a package deal, these last two games in the last 3 days. Just so exciting and totally worth the payoff of all the time that people spend obsessing over who's going to be on the roster and who's coming back again and how are they going to manage the minutes and how are they going to balance some of these younger players with some of these older veteran legend walking Hall of Famers, and seeing them all on the court and seeing how much it mattered to all of them. And I mean, it was like LeBron's game all day. He was just taking over and kicking ass. And then in the fourth quarter, a Steph Curry barrage of threes. And then you look up and he hit 8 threes today, coming after he hit 9 in the semifinal against Serbia. And then it's like, okay, his first Olympics, he made 17 threes across the last two games. And then he's, talking into the crowd and getting all excited and totally animated after the game. And you could go down the list. There were so many guys who showed up really, really big tonight. Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, Devin Booker. It was a very fun game and it was a fun team to follow. And we were keyed into their tune-up games before the Olympics, watched them run the table 6-0 during the Olympics and cap it off where they really did get tested with these two games. And like you said, this game, they were like up 8, 9, 11, 12 a couple of times. And then France made a couple of quick runs. There was that one at the very end of the third quarter when they cut it to from like 11 to 6, I think. So they, you know, they never put them away. I think LeBron might have played more minutes than maybe he expected. There was that one stretch when Dwayne Wade was making fun of him because they put him on the bench for 31 seconds and then brought him back in the game. But, you know, they needed all their guys and enough of them stepped up. So they win gold and they deserved it. And it was fun to watch.
Yeah, you're right that, you know, we know all these athletes, right? We see them all the time in the NBA, but there's something about, and even if, you know, there's the trend of super teams in the NBA where you're seeing a lot of these guys on the same team together, right? LeBron and Anthony Davis are playing together, and obviously Steph and Durant played together for a while. But, you know, to see them all on the same team together, all, you know, thriving, and then Stephen Curry has this, like, just transcendent performance. You said 8 threes. He was 8 for 12. Like, just, I mean, you know, he just wasn't missing. And he was 8 for 13 overall. He took 1 2-point shot and he missed it. You said that fourth quarter where he just took over. And you could see how much he was enjoying it. You know, this being his one and likely only Olympic shot, and he made sure that he was going home with that gold medal. Just a legendary performance to add to everything else he's done in his career. Unparalleled player, shooter, you know, in this era, in any era. An amazing, amazing performance to just drive home just how special he is against a really good France team.
And just, you gave his numbers, but just to add on to that, I believe the team went 18 for 36 on threes, which is otherworldly to shoot 50% from beyond the arc. And again, I was sort of like not keeping a full play-by-play, but just making notes. And in my notes, it's like Curry 3, LeBron 3, Curry 3, Durant 3, Booker 3. It was just like keeping track of like guys who had big shots. There were so many special plays, they almost you almost forget them all. I don't want to forget LeBron in the first quarter. He had that block, and then soon after he had this behind the back pass in the paint to Devin Booker that was just like such a fun pass. And Dwayne, again, I keep talking about Dwayne Wade, but he was good with Noah Eagle on the commentary. But Dwayne Wade was like, I can't understand why he even tried that pass. I think he said it was maybe desperation, but it was just like this beautiful behind the back between two guys, like while they were all moving, and just hits a guy right under the basket. And there was a moment where Anthony Edwards and Rudy Gobert, he was going at Rudy Gobert and their teammates on the Timberwolves. And there was some Embiid got tangled up with also with Gobert. And then Anthony Davis got a tech for like stepping on the court a little bit. You know, it got a little bit chippy at times. Like you said, Wemby was amazing and that kept them in. But there were just like so many cool moments watching these guys interacting with each other as teammates. And, you know, it was very fun, and there's a reason we talk about it so much, and I'm sure it'll be the same way 4 years from now. And listen, everyone's saying, oh, it's LeBron's last Olympics, but I don't know if 4 years from now he's still playing for the Lakers and the Olympics are in LA, or even if he's retired, like, screw it, just put him on the team anyway.
Yeah.
You know, who knows, but that's very, very far away. For now, it feels like this team has all the pressure in the world on them every single time. They are expected to not just win gold, but be perfect and blow people out. And we've all heard the story a million times. It's hard to do that. The world has caught up to them, but they're still good enough that even with all that pressure, they are the best team and they should win. And so it's nice to see when they show up for the moment, and they do.
I want to say one more thing about Wembanyama, because, you know, certainly he's come into the NBA with so much hype, but you haven't seen him play important games because that Spurs team that he's on is just god awful. But you see him have this this incredible game. He had, I have the box score in front of me. He had 26 points on 11 of 19 shooting. He was 8 of 11 from 2. He had 7 rebounds, 2 assists, and that's it. So and a steal. So, like, he has this incredible game, best player on his team by far, against what is, you know, it's an all-star team for the U.S., right? It's like it's the best players from the best league in the world, all combined together. And unlike in an all-star team, they're playing hard, just something on the line. And he goes out and he has an incredible game. Again, he's only 20 years old. You have to feel like just really optimistic about his future in the NBA after this game, because you got to see him play a competitive game against an elite, elite team and shine under what's, you know, immense pressure as well. Just really, like, you know, I know we're talking about the Olympics here, but just a quick, you know, diversion to the NBA. If you're an NBA fan, you know, I mean, that tells you everything you got to know about that guy.
Yeah, they showed him getting emotional, tearing up after the game, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, it feels like, I'm sure it feels to him like a missed opportunity. He'll be back in the Olympics, and he could win gold. France will be a tough team for the U.S. moving forward, especially while they have him. But, you know, they won't have a chance to play in their home country again.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, this was the kind of game that, you know, if he wins multiple championships and we watch the documentary about him someday, they're showing footage of this game and talking about this as a stepping stone part of his journey. And, you know, you got to lose before you win a lot of the time. And this feels like a part of his story. And yeah, whew, he was good. I thought you were going to, when you said one last thing, I thought you were going to talk about Gershon Yabusele.
Oh, that guy too. I mean, so that was another thing is like, you're watching this game and we've talked about like the NBA talent on other teams. And with the France team, it's a lot of like former NBA talent, like Gershon Yabusele, who was drafted by the Celtics. He played a couple of years there. He plays over in Spain now, I believe. He had 20 points and he had that dunk on LeBron. That was outrageous. I've never seen anybody dunk on LeBron like that. I remarked that it looked like it was like that famous Vince Carter dunk on the Frenchman Frédéric Weiss. Except, you know, Frédéric Weiss is some, you know, basically a chump. And then here's, you know, Yabusele, a great, you know, not a great player, not a very well-known player, dunking on like the all-time great on LeBron. It was one of those things where, you know, you're glad at least that Yabusele got that highlight if he didn't get the gold medal.
Basically a chump, you said. Sorry, Frédéric Weiss, if you've been listening to us. And
I think I wanted to dial that back a bit because I think that guy has had a lot of struggles after getting dunked on like that. I think it's kind of weighed on him. So my apologies to Frédéric Weiss.
Anyway, good for LeBron going up. Try and make the block. Who cares? Get posterized. It happens. Exactly. It's basketball.
Yeah.
All right. Well, where to go next? We could go back to the track because it was another crazy day on the track. But let's do soccer because that's the other big story. The U.S. women's national team. You know, they are so popular in this country, and this is a team that means so much to so many people, and especially this past era that we have seen, and so many of those players were not here, and it's like a new generation. We had talked about this, and I think the expectations were a little bit lower. I don't think fans expected them to win gold in the way that they have in previous tournaments. People wanted to see them play well, and I think probably still had some expectations, but I think coming in and winning a gold medal is just an awesome accomplishment. They won. The game was 1-0. It was a goal by Mallory Swanson in the 57th minute, which I think in live time, some people I was following thought it was offsides, but then they did a review and it looked like it was pretty clearly it was a good call. So that's good. You don't want controversy around the only goal of the game.
Right.
They added 10 minutes of extra time, and it required a save by Neyer in goal in that extra time period. So it was not, it was never a sure thing. It was, you know, a tough, hard-fought game. I'm not Mr. Soccer expert here, and you know, it was a 90-minute game with lots of other stuff going on. So I can't say that it had my, you know, I didn't have the volume on the soccer game the entire day as I was trying to follow everything else happening. But a cool win for them, and I want to give a couple of stats. It's their first gold since 2012. This is the 8th Olympics since women's soccer became a sport in the Olympics. You know, it's been a sport for a long time. The U.S. has won 5 gold medals in those 8 Olympics, which is an awesome run, and 7 total medals, 7 out of 8. So this is a team that really dominated the world for a stretch. I think they had 3 straight golds in 04, 08, and 2012. And then hadn't been able to get back to the top of the podium in 12 years. And now they're back there. And so it's an awesome achievement. I think it's got to give them a lot of confidence moving forward because we had talked about this being a transition team with new players. And now they've got an Olympic title under their belt. And so, you know, look out next major international tournament, future Olympics, future World Cups. You know, they had some players who really shined in this tournament, and that's a big win for them.
Yeah. Yeah. An amazing, amazing game. You know, you mentioned just it was just that one goal, right? I mean, it was, and the U.S. was lucky that not lucky, but they were fortunate that they did get that goal and that they were able to keep Brazil off the score sheet because Brazil threatened a lot. Neyer had to be really, really good. I know, Mitch, you've shouted out your fellow Pennsylvanians on the women's field hockey. Let me give a shout out to fellow Southwestern Connecticut native Alyssa Neyer. She was incredible. She had to make some really tough saves, including that one you mentioned in stoppage time. That was really, really tough. You mentioned the shout for the Swanson goal to be called offside. Well, it looked like the Brazilian player was more offside on that one. But again, like, just like, you don't want to have to go to the video review on that if it does go in. So you want to just have the goalie make the stop and then not have to worry about it. But yeah, that was that stoppage time was crazy because there was that incredible save by Nair, and then just a few minutes later, there was this really hard hit from a Brazilian player on the American captain, Lindsay Horan. Not looked like, I mean, I was afraid for a second that she was knocked unconscious, but it seemed like, no, she was okay. She was able to sit back up. It was a really tough hit. I'm surprised it didn't result in a red card, but just a lot of drama there at the end. And then that's a part, you know, so you had the 10-minute stoppage time, and then they had that long, you know, delay for the injury. So you had even more time added on after that. So, you know, there's some anxious moments there waiting for the clock to finally expire and for the referee to blow her whistle. But yeah, and a really exciting game. Like you said, a great win for a team that had not won in a few Olympics, and also a great win. We've talked a little bit about how this is it's a new era for the U.S. women's team in a lot of ways. And, you know, obviously with the players, but also with the coach, Emma Hayes, the coach who they just hired from Chelsea, where they won the women, I believe they call it the Women's Super League in England. She had just, you know, she had won a championship with Chelsea, comes over to the U.S. This is just her 10th game in charge of the U.S. national team. So, you know, really impressive to, you know, to gel under Hayes so quickly and to get this really big result.
Yep. Great accomplishment. And I think there's always pressure on a new coach, and so this is a great way to start. They were talking, you know, I was hearing them talk a little bit about like lineups and who she's comfortable with. And she was saying she doesn't even know the team that well, yeah, because they haven't had that many games with her. And so she was saying one of the lineups that was on the field at once, she was like, these are the 11 that I know and was comfortable with them. You got to assume, I mean, they know each other better now. And again, they're going to be in better shape moving forward, you would think.
Yeah. Like you said, great, you know, great to have them. Like, they've been, you know, kind of struggling these past, struggling is a relative term in terms of this team, but, you know, they haven't been winning all these, you know, tournaments you expect them to. And then they bring in a new coach and she wins the first one. So obviously, you know, everything's looking up from there. Do you want to do the marathon separately, or should we fold the marathon in here as well?
You can fold it in. I only saw a replay. I was not awake at 2 o'clock in the morning to watch the marathon, though I did catch up on a couple of things that happened after. But yeah, let's do all the running and jumping and throwing. Okay. Let's do it. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So I just want to mention, we don't have to spend a ton of time on the marathon, because like you said, I was not up at 2 a.m. either. It was very early, but it was interesting for a couple of reasons. So I mentioned yesterday that Tamarat Tola of Ethiopia was one of the favorites. He did win gold. He snapped that Ethiopia's gold medal drought in the marathon. Ethiopia has more medals or more gold medals than any other country in the men's marathon, but had not won since 2000. So he won. That's their fifth gold medal in the men's marathon. And then we've also talked about Eliud Kipchoge, the Kenyan legend, back-to-back defending Olympic champion. He did not finish the race, but still had one of the more memorable kind of, you know, days on the road today, because he dropped out, I don't know, maybe in like the middle-ish of the race, and he got to, you know, when he got to wherever the press was, he was not wearing any shoes and he did not have his shirt. And they asked him about that. He said, oh, like, you know, when I decided I was going to drop out and I just couldn't keep going. And we talked about how tough this course was, right? So obviously it took a toll on him and he had to drop out. But he said, when I decided to drop out, he said he just walked about 2 kilometers, like a mile, you know, a little over a mile, with a group of about 300 fans, and then he gave away his shirt and his shoes. And I just thought, like, what an amazing, like, this guy is having obviously a terrible day. He, you know, he's 39, he's probably, you know, nearing the end of his athletic career, although marathoner runners, they can go for a while, but, you know, he's having a really frustrating day, but he doesn't let it get him down. You know, he shares this great moment with the fans. I thought that was, you know, everybody likes to talk about the Olympic spirit. Well, you know, there it is on display, a really, really powerful moment for Kipchoge, a legend who was having a hard time.
Yeah, I loved that. And then I missed this moment, but we got an email. So yesterday I put out a call and I suggested people should email us. We're going to recap the whole Olympics after it's over. And if you've got a favorite moment in a sport or something you saw that maybe we didn't talk about, absolutely send it our way. And we got a few of them today. I'm mitch.goldich@si.com. Dan is dan.gartland@si.com. So we got an email today from a listener named Matt Lowell talking about the marathon. He said he absolutely loved the men's finish. Americans Connor Martz and Clayton Young finished 8th and 9th, and then they remained at the finish line to high-five and congratulate the runners behind them. I love the marathon, so I'm biased, but I thought that was a lovely moment. And that was a cool thing, which I did not otherwise see, so I was glad that he called that to our attention. And yeah, it's similar with Kipchoge. It's a tough day, and sometimes you're going to you know, DNF and show up without your shoes and your shirt on. And sometimes you're going to finish, but be eighth or ninth. And, you know, it's a tough event where only three people are going to win medals and everyone's on the course for more than 2 hours. And so there are a lot of people running. I think there are 50 people in the race. And if you're in, you know, 30th to 50th, you know, you're not going to medal, but you want to finish anyway, just to get to the finish line. And like you said, grab some of that Olympic spirit. So it's some fun to see a lot of that from Team USA today.
Yeah, another Team USA group that could have high-fived their opponents as they crossed the finish line is the women's 4x400 relay team. Holy cow, they ran away with that thing. Like, just, I think they won by like 4 or 5 seconds. It was not even close. So this was, you know, the U.S. was heavily favored in this event. They'd won it several times in a row. I don't have the full number in front of me, but they are, you know, just, they're basically a dynasty in this particular event.
I think you have it in front of you? I think I saw on TV that it's eight, which would match if the U.S. women's basketball team wins tomorrow. That would also be eight. But I believe that's the number that I saw.
Yeah. So eight. And then it was, you know, and again, not even close in this one because it was Sydney McLaughlin-Lavroni. We've talked about her at length here because she's just so dominant in that 400 meter hurdles. Well, here she is running the 400 meter flat. And she had the second leg of this relay. And got out to an enormous lead, like really pulling away from the rest of her opponents. And then, you know, the U.S. did not give that lead up. Ended up being Gabby Thomas, the 200 meter winner, who had the anchor leg. And she came through, you know, cruising to the finish line, you know, and like I said, like 4 or 5 seconds in front of everybody else. Like it was like, you know, it's a 4 minute race or so. And by the time it was halfway over, you're like, okay, it's just a matter of even the announcers were saying, all right, it's a race now for second and third because they're going to win. It's just a question of how much they win by. They set somehow it was not a world record, not even an Olympic record. It was a national and continental record. So, you know, even though it was such a wide margin, it was not, you know, not a historically great time, which is somehow hard to believe, but an amazing, amazing performance by them.
Yeah, they pulled so far ahead, even on the second leg, you could tell. And then they ran into the Katie Ledecky problem, which is where there's no good camera angle to show them and all of the people so far behind them. And so it turned into one of those kind of moments. But yeah, just unbelievable dominance. I'm checking. It is eight straight. I can confirm now.
Okay.
So just an unreal run. No pun intended. You know, very cool dominance. They should have put hurdles out in front of her just to make it a little a little tough. Yeah, it's almost like cheating to run without hurdles, but yeah, but it would have been fine with them. Yeah.
Yeah, and then further down the line in that race, so we've talked a lot about Femke Bol from the Netherlands, and she had the anchor leg for that team and propelled them from fourth up to second. So they got silver. We saw her overtake the U.S. team in that mixed 4x4 relay. So another great run from her where she came through and got a silver for them. And then it was really interesting because Ireland was in this race, and it was Ireland's first time qualifying for the final in this event. And they were leading for a while, and then obviously the U.S. took the lead, and then they were in second, but then they faded down the stretch, ended up finishing fourth behind Great Britain, who got bronze. But nice to see an unfamiliar country have a decent showing on the track there.
Yeah, well then let's switch over to the men's side, because it was a double for the U.S., where they also had the men's 4x400. And we talked a lot on, was it yesterday or the day before? Who can even remember? About the struggles that the U.S. had in the 4x100. And so here, they took care of business and won the 4x400. And I loved the anchor leg because it was Rye Benjamin, the American sprinter who we talked about yesterday, who won the men's 400 hurdles. He had the revenge against Warholm, I think his name was. Karsten Warholm from Norway. And he won the 400 hurdles, and he was running against Letsile Tobogo of Botswana, who we talked about as the winner of the 200, that big race when Noah Lyles had COVID and finished in third. And watching them go back and forth was also very fun. Not even back and forth, sorry, I should say. Rye Benjamin had him and just like held him off as a challenger, and they set an Olympic record. So that was the other big one, I'd say. The U.S. had a couple other golds on the track. I don't know if you want to get into more detail on the men's 4x100, but Masai Russell won the 100 hurdles, and then this was not a win, but a nice accomplishment for Grant Fisher, first American to medal in both the 5,000 and the 10,000 in the same Olympics. He pulled off a bronze in both.
Yeah, so just I wanted to say this quickly on that men's relay. How awesome was it to see Tobogo in that race, because we saw him in the 100, in the 200, and then I saw the guys in the Botswana jersey. I did not realize that Tobogo was on that team. And I'm like, wow, he's running. I mean, obviously these are professional runners. He's not a 400 meter specialist, but he absolutely can run it. So that was fun to see him. And then yeah, that 5,000 meters, great moment for Fisher. Who, like you said, yeah, first to win both the 5K and the 10K in the same Olympics. Also, just the second American to medal in that event since 1964. So not an event that the Americans usually do very well in. And he had another great late push to move into bronze position there. That race was really exciting because it came down. It was won by Jakob Ingebrigtsen from Norway, who we had talked about as being the favorite in the 1500 and that didn't even medal. And then here he is in this other event where he's not as heavy of a favorite, ends up winning it. And he had this great late push where he just, they were all hanging out in a pack, waiting for the chance to make a move. And then there was a guy, I think from Kenya, who came alongside him. And that's when Ingebrigtsen said, all right, now I'm turning on the jets. And he just got out in front and he looked, obviously he was, and he got a pretty decent lead, but it was so interesting because he didn't look like he was really, really exerting himself too much. He looked so in control, so calm. And then he just cruised to victory, a really, really exciting race, a really great performance from him. I'm glad he was able to get that gold after he failed in the 15.
Yeah. The track was awesome every day. It was just like day after day, so much fun. Every day there was like a big race. And and the U.S. did amazingly. I think it was 14 golds was the final number on the track.
Oh, wow.
Which is, I forget the exact stat, but it was like the most in a non-boycotted Olympics since it might have been 1964 or somewhere around there. But just gives you an idea of what a dominant showing it was. It felt like every day we were talking about a different race that they won. Could have been another one. Of course, the 4x100 relay was a struggle. But aside from that one race, it feels like everything went well. They had a ton of golds and they had a ton of like double podium races. But before we finish with track and field, the most dramatic event of the day was the men's high jump. I was locked in on this one, and thankfully they did a good job covering this on Gold Zone because my other screens were busy elsewhere. But the men's high jump was amazing, and to set this up, we have to go back 3 years. Remember that this is the event where there was the tie last year, the guy from Italy and the guy from Qatar. And instead of a jump off, they decided to just share the gold medal, and they were really good friends. And so they had this amazing moment where they like hugged and like they like fell and were like rolling on the track. And it was just this like beautiful moment of sportsmanship. And then I remember the cameras following them around in the Olympic Village afterward. So with that as the backdrop, those two guys are both back in the final. But it comes down to another potential tie. This time between Hamish Kerr of New Zealand and Shelby McEwen of the U.S. Shout out, Shelby. And those guys also finish tied, and they give them the option of sharing the gold medal like we saw last time.
Yeah.
And Shelby McEwen says, no, no, let's jump this off. And I respect it. I will say, I am on record that I loved the tie last time around. It was fun. It was exciting. It was this wonderful moment of sportsmanship and what the Olympics are supposed to be all about and all that. But I will say, I think it gets a little old if you see it every single time. And so even though I loved it that first time that I saw it, I was glad to see them jump off. And I thought it was just an awesome decision to say, hey, we're here at the Olympics. We're the final two. We're both winning medals. Let's go for the gold. And then what followed was quite dramatic because then they had to jump. I don't have the actual heights, the numbers written down, but basically they set the bar at the next level. Neither of them were able to jump it. And so what they do is instead of going back to your scores and your previous jumps that you've hit, they actually lowered the bar, which sounds like something that is against the Olympic spirit where they always talk about raising the bar. Well, let's lower the bar. Both of them failed again, and then they lowered the bar again. And so, and at this point, I mean, their legs are tired. You've got to think about the number of jumps that they've had and how long the competition drags on. And then they actually had to take a break because they had the 400 relays going. And so they like took a break, and it's just like this fascinating wrinkle in this competition where you're sharing real estate on the track and the infield with other events. And then finally they went again. And finally the New Zealander Hamish Kerr, completes a jump and he wins and he gets the gold. So I believe it was Shelby McEwen who made the decision not to jump. The tie, sorry, and to do the jump off. So it ended up biting him, but he still gets out of there with a silver medal, And, you know, I hope he feels good about it, that he made the decision to go compete, because that's what people love to see, is when the athletes, you know, want to be competitive and want to not just share the podium, but go out on top and by yourself. And so I thought it was a fun event. It was quirky. Just the way it happened was kind of memorable. And it was a very exciting ending. And in this case, it worked out for the New Zealander, and it's a silver for the U.S.
Yeah, you could tell that he was like, he didn't even hesitate when it came down to the, you know, make the decision whether to jump or to just share the gold. He did not miss a beat, and he said no. Like he motioned very emphatically. He's like, he did like the circle in the air like the NBA players do when they want a replay review, and he was like, no, like let's keep going. So obviously he was, you know, he felt confident in that moment about the decision he was making, and it did come back to bite him. It did also. It'll be interesting to see, because the U.S. is locked in this gold medal race with China. I think maybe the men's basketball win maybe tied them, but it's going to be neck and neck. And so that one goal that he could have had, you know, might make a big difference.
I think that is right. So when we woke up this morning, the U.S. and China were both tied with 33 golds. And then all of a sudden, China won four in quick succession. There was a weightlifting and rhythmic gymnastics and diving and team table tennis. And so then all of a sudden, the U.S. is down by four, but then they picked it up with the two 4x400 relays and the hurdles and the soccer and the basketball. And so I think you're right that they are now tied at 38. So there are going to be a couple of opportunities tomorrow, and we'll get into those at the end of the show. But yeah, it looks like the U.S., you know, they'll have to capitalize on a couple things, but it is very possible that that decision may end up costing them a medal count. Although you don't want to say that, because it just because it happened last doesn't mean it's the thing that cost it. There were hundreds of events along the way, and when you're looking at totals, the events that happened on day one matter just as much as the events that happened on day 15. So I'd hate for people to look at it and say that's what cost them. But with everybody, it did happen at the time when everyone was hyper-focused on the count. That part is true.
True. One very quick thing I want to mention before we move on from track. I overlooked this. I think it deserves, it's a credible achievement. It deserves to be mentioned. In the women's 1500, Faith Kipyegon, I believe she's from Kenya, she had this historic three-peat where she won that event and has now won it three Olympics in a row. She's the first woman to win that event three times in a row ever. And she's also just the third woman to three-peat in a track and field event. So really amazing from her. They were talking about how she had just given birth to a daughter just a few years ago and had this great comeback. So really amazing from her. Great accomplishment. And I just want to make sure we shouted her out before we moved on to the next thing.
Yeah, glad you brought that up. And yeah, so we've got the women's marathon at 2 a.m. But aside from that, we are finished with the running and the track and the field. But boy, did it deliver. All right, I will move on to another sport that delivered, and that's the women's golf tournament, which wrapped up today. And it had, I was hoping for like the 7-person playoff again. And there was a brief moment in the morning when it looked like that might happen, where there were 6 or 7 people all bunched up tied for like second and third. But the ending that we got, I thought, was pretty satisfying. So it was Lydia Ko, who we talked about. She's also from New Zealand. Big day for the Kiwis. She had medaled in each of the past two Olympics. So golf has only been in the Olympics since 2016, and in all three games since it has been an event, she has medaled. She went silver the first time, bronze the second time, and then gold here. She was minus 11 at the turn, and she had a 4-shot lead, and then she did actually come back to the field a bit. So then she was up one with 3 holes to go, and then hung on to take it. And it's a really cool moment for her. We mentioned yesterday, she's only 27, but she had a lot of success. I think she might have been the youngest player to win a tournament and youngest to win a major. And, you know, she had all these achievements very early in her career. And one thing that is very cool that happened today that I was not aware was even a subplot of this event is that she qualified for the Hall of Fame today.
Yeah.
There's apparently a point system based on wins and major wins and Olympic medals count. And so not only did she get the Olympic gold medal, but she's going to be a Hall of Famer based on this finish today. And still, you know, she's 27, so there's time to keep playing and racking up wins. But very, very cool to have the trifecta, the gold, silver, and bronze at 3 straight Olympics. Hall of Famer. Awesome win for her. Awesome moment. The Americans, we had talked about them possibly having a shot. Nelly Korda started out with a couple of birdies and then fell off. And Rose Zhang was in the final group with the two leaders. She was in third place going into the day. She fell off. Morgan Mitro fell off. I was excited for her. She was like ranked well in the hundreds in the world rankings. But then it was fun that she had a big day on, I think it was Friday, and was playing with the winners. And you know, tough for her that that happened. She was put in that position where all of a sudden you're in the spotlight and you're in the final group. But hope she had a cool time playing, had that 28 on the front nine, and hopefully a fun experience for her. But yeah, Lydia Ko. So congrats, two New Zealand gold medals discussed on this show back to back.
Yeah, yeah. Mitro had a 79 today, seven over. So she really fell down the leaderboard and finished tied 18th. So that was rough. There was an interesting moment. So you mentioned the possibility of playoffs, and so. You mentioned how Ko was like clinging to this one shot lead. Well, the woman who got silver was Germany's Esther Henselheit or Henselheit. She had silver. She had a 66, the second best round of the day, and she rocketed up from 13th place all the way up to second. And then so she finishes earlier, right? Because she was down in 13th place. She had an earlier tee time. So she's sitting in the clubhouse. She's not on the range, not on the putting green. There's a potential she could have to go back out and play a playoff with Ko. But what is she doing? She's in the clubhouse scrolling on her phone. She looked so chill. It was really interesting to see her. Like, clearly it's like, should be a tense moment, right? It's like, oh, I might have to go out and maybe get a gold medal. She's like, nah, I got the silver. I'm just here. I'm on Twitter or whatever. So that was cool. And then there was some drama
that
for
happened,
the bronze.
That happened on the men's side where, like, Scottie Scheffler was the clubhouse leader, and he was on the range. And like,
yes, he was.
He was not finished for as long, so he did not have as much time, but he went straight to the range, and that's where he was when he found out that he was a gold medalist, which is what a lot of people do. But to each their own, if you've got time and you want to sit on your phone, I don't blame you. I sit on my phone all the time, too. So.
That's right. Yeah, and then there was some cool, you mentioned the chase for bronze, and it was won by Lin Jiu of China. So she was at -7, and then there were four players behind her at -6, and a few of them had a real shot because Lin had a bogey on 17 to make it really interesting, but then ended up birdieing 18 to put an end to it. But yeah, there were a few that, like, Bianca Patagangan of the Philippines, she birdied both 17 and 18. Looked like she was going to have a shot after that bogey by Lin didn't come to fruition. And then you got to feel bad for Japan's Miyu Yamashita. She entered the final round tied for second, but then she shot a 73 in the final round, including two double bogeys. The final straw, she put her tee shot in the water on the par 3 16th. And made a double bogey 5 there, and that just knocked her out of contention, and she missed out on medaling. So really tough day for her. It's tough, you know, these margins in the golf tournament, you know, just one stroke, it's really, you know, the difference between being in a playoff, winning a medal. Even, you know, if she had made a par on that 16th hole, then she would have had a silver. So really tough day for her.
Yeah, 18 was a good birdie opportunity, which I think just
made
it fun.
Yeah.
We talked about someone had the eagle on the 18th hole on Saturday, I believe. And I just think that keeps it exciting when you know that there's that birdie sitting there for anyone coming in on the final hole.
Yeah. So I want to hit on the weightlifting briefly because I mentioned I was watching primarily the soccer game while that was going on, but I had on my tablet, I had the weightlifting on, and I wasn't really paying too close attention to it. It's tough when you don't have the audio to tell you, like, you know, what this lift is for. But I saw the Norwegian woman who won the 81 kilogram weight class. I saw her on the podium, just the most emotional I've seen any athlete, I think, on the podium at these Olympics. And so I had to look up her story and what it was all about. So this is Norway's Solfrid Kowanda. She was born in Finland. Her mother is from Finland. Her father's from the Ivory Coast. She moved to Norway when she was 9, and then she was in foster care from 15 to 18. She's a former CrossFit athlete. She met a weightlifting coach via CrossFit. The guy said, hey, you should focus on weightlifting. She goes to a weightlifting gym, started weightlifting in 2020, and then qualified for the national championships only days later after her first, like, training session in weightlifting. So an amazing turnaround for her. So she won this 81 kilogram weight class. It's only the second weightlifting medal in Norwegian history. The only other one came, it was a gold in 1972. A man named Leif Jensen won the men's 82 kilogram weight class. And Kowanda had an amazing day. She set Olympic records in both the clean and jerk and the total. That was 154 kilograms or 340 pounds in the clean and jerk. And then her total was 275 or 606 pounds. So yeah, like, just she, and obviously, you know, well worth the gold medal, getting an Olympic record, and then that amazing outpouring of emotion. It was really great to see. You gotta feel happy for her.
Yeah, was it a skateboarder? There was another athlete we talked about who picked up a sport in 2020 and then made it to the Olympics.
It was a 13-year-old skateboarder from also coincidentally born in Finland, who was living in Australia in 2020, started skateboarding, and then she finished like fifth, I think, in the women's event. But
good memory. We've had so many names and countries in and out of our brains over the last 15 days that it gets tough to keep it all straight.
That's memorable.
But that's amazing to go from picking up a sport in 2020 to Olympic champ and world records.
Exactly.
Unreal. Okay, well, we should probably go rapid fire at this point. But I just want to say, you mentioned the day was sort of front-loaded, and so there was some morning stuff that I didn't see a ton of, but tried to catch up on later. Well, I mentioned the two medals for China in both diving and table tennis, and I'm bringing them up now just to make the point. China swept both events. They won every gold medal there was to win in both diving and table tennis, which is incredible. There are 8 diving events because there's men's and women's, individual and sink, springboard and platform. China won all 8. And then table tennis, there's the men's and women's, and there's the team, which has the doubles element. There's singles and doubles, and they just won everything. We talked a lot on the preview show. I went on my long stat-filled rant about how good they are and how China has dominated and is often playing against themselves in the finals. But just an unreal accomplishment. So when you think about, the U.S. won all those medals in track and field and swimming, how is China tied with them in the medal count? Well, it's because they cleaned up in those two sports, so I wanted to give them some credit and mention those unreal fun facts. I think it's the first time that anyone has swept all 8 diving events, although I did see that China won 7 out of 8 in 3 of the past 4 Olympics, so this time they got that elusive 8th gold, so congrats to all of their divers.
Yeah, so they had so the diving. I was keeping an eye on this because I had mentioned yesterday in the previous section how Cao Yuan of China, how he had he had the chance to complete that sweep, and they actually mentioned on the broadcast that after having won, like you said, 7 out of 8 at 3 of the last 3 Olympics, that they had set the sweep as a goal, that they were like, we're coming in there and we're going to do the sweep. Like, so amazing, incredible pressure on China to actually complete what had never been done before since they moved to the 8 event structure. You know, there were some, I think China had won back when there were only 4 events, but now nobody had ever gone 8 for 8 before. And it's the 10th straight time that China has led the diving medal count. They also took 2 silvers and a bronze. They had more silvers than any other nation in addition to all those golds. So just crushing it on the platform and on the springboard there. Really, really incredible achievement.
Yeah, amazing.
I think I just mentioned briefly we talked about France, you know, losing on home soil the basketball game. Well, they won the men's volleyball. It's an amazing achievement for France. I mean, they've got, I have to refresh my numbers here, but I believe it's there. So they beat Poland in that match. It was a good match. I watched a fair amount of it. It's the first repeat championship in men's volleyball since the U.S. in 1984 and 88. And the U.S. France now has its most medals since 1900. We talked about the boost that host countries can get. Well, it's really paying off for France because their most medals since 1900 and their most golds since 1996. I think they have a chance to surpass that. I think I saw a Taekwondo athlete who's going to be in a final. So they might have their most gold medals since that 1900 Olympics.
All right. Well, I will briefly touch on the canoe sprint. And, you know, I was thinking about don't blame the high jumper, Shelby McEwen, if the U.S. is one gold medal short of China, because they had another heartbreaking moment where they missed out on a gold on a photo finish. I don't know if you saw this one, but Nevin Harrison, who we had talked about was the defending champ in the 200-meter sprint. She was in her race early this morning and was leading the whole way and then just barely got edged out by a Canadian, and it was so dramatic. They get to the end, and sometimes they'll at least show 1 and 2, and this time they just put up PF in both of their lanes for photo finish, and it looked like she just barely got edged out, and it turned out that she did. So still a silver medal for Nevin Harrison, which we've talked about several times the last 2 weeks, that people should, you can feel good about a silver. It's still a cool accomplishment. And she's now a two-time Olympic medalist, which is great for her with the gold and the silver. But then there's also an athlete that I don't know if we've talked about at all, or certainly not enough. But Lisa Carrington, guess where she's from? You guessed it, New Zealand. Big day for New Zealand. She won her third gold in Paris. She won the 500 singles canoe today. Her third gold in Paris. She has medaled in four straight Olympics. She has eight total golds plus a bronze for nine Olympic medals in her career, which is just like legendary. I think they said that's like number one all time in this sport, canoe sprint. You know, each sport's different with how many opportunities you have to win medals, and some have more than others. But just a total legend cleaning up in her fourth Olympics and now eight gold medals. That's like we talked about Simone Biles entering that territory with eight golds and how that list is small of, you know, legends of these sports and on the list of all time women, most medals on the women's side, and Katie Ledecky's in that company. And Lisa Carrington's up there with eight golds also. So I wanted to give her a shout out because there were, there was an exciting race. And then there's also a cool moment with a little history.
Yeah, that's great. I hadn't heard that name before, and I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's, like you said, what a list to be on. I have one note on wrestling, so I will let you take the lead on that. But the last thing I have is the women's handball. We mentioned another opportunity for France to win a gold, but they did not. They lost to Norway in the gold medal match. It was really close at the half. I watched a lot of the first half, and Norway went into halftime up 15-13, but then totally pulled away toward the end of that game. They ended the game on a 5-1 run. So it's the third gold medal for Norway. It's their first since they repeated in 2008 and 2012. And they've now won eight medals in their nine Olympic appearances. So Norway, crushing it on the women's handball front. France, had a chance here to get that gold, but too bad they came up short.
All right. I have a couple other sports, but I can move to wrestling. So there were three wrestlers who entered the day at like the beginning of the tournament, and if they moved on, they would have medal events tomorrow. Zane Rutherford, he lost, but he will get a chance in the repêchage. Kennedy Blades was awesome. She won all three of her matches. The final match was like an exciting one and back and forth high scoring. She won 8-6, so she's going to be in the finals. Kyle Snyder went win-win-loss, so he will be in the bronze medal match tomorrow. And then I'm wondering what your note is on, because the most exciting match of the day was Kyle Dake, who had started his Olympics yesterday, and then he had his bronze medal match today. This was, I don't know if I should give the play-by-play, but basically, with 48 seconds left, they went to a video review, and it was very confusing, because apparently there were two plays that they wanted to review, and so they were showing the play on the monitor that they were looking at. And so I mentioned there's 48 seconds left, and they're showing a play that happened with 2 minutes on the clock. And Kyle Dake is just like walking around the mat, like, that's the wrong sequence. That's not the sequence. Like trying to explain to them that they're looking at the wrong play. And nobody had told him yet, like, no, we're going to do that one too. We're looking at this. So it was very confusing. And then the sequence ends and they rule that Dake is down 4-1. And then, he scores, makes it 4-3. There was another challenge with 31 seconds left, and it was like they made the we talked about how crazy fencing was with all of the challenges, and it was just like, oh my god, this match is taking forever, and it's getting kind of ridiculous, the length of these challenges. And especially wrestling's a sport where guys get, men and women, they get so tired, and like a big part of the sport is you want to tire your opponent out and try to score points off them. So they're not just having reviews, but like you're letting your opponent recover if you've got them on the ropes. So anyway, they get back in action with 31 seconds left, and he's trailing, and he completes basically a throw and a roll, scores a flurry of points, and all of a sudden he's ahead 10-4, and that's the final score. So he is a back-to-back bronze medalist, and did it in crazy fashion. There was a moment where he's down 4-1 with like 40 seconds left, and next thing you know, he's a winner 10-4. Crazy match, crazy story, and there he is, two-time Olympic bronze medalist. What was your take? What did you want to say about this match?
I found the wrestling to be kind of tough to watch. All the replay reviews are really, they like you said, they like, if there's an advantage or a disadvantage to letting your opponent catch their breath, obviously, but it's also, it takes the momentum away. But and then they were, and then also it was, what I enjoyed about the challenges though was Scott Hansen on Gold Zone. He was really given, he was being really snarky about how long the explanation of the result of the challenges. At one point he was like, so right, so there's a challenge here, and he goes, and they'll take 2 or 3 minutes to describe what happened and what the result of the challenge is. But they, you know, it was hard because I was watching this via Gold Zone. And they were, you know, there are all these challenges, and they're, all right, now we're going to cut away because they're spending forever on this challenge. And then they, I think there was a track race, I think it was the 100-meter hurdles, and then they came back to it, and he was like, Dake was celebrating. I was like, all right, well, hang on, I gotta pull this up on a replay and see what actually happened. And then, like, that throw where he it was one of the rare instances you haven't seen, or, from the little wrestling that I've watched, you don't see a lot of guys throw their opponent over their head like he did in that instance to win the match. With very little time on the clock, just a really thrilling way to win a match. Really impressive. Really, you know, it's like, it's the thing that I like about the wrestling is like, okay, you can get in a hole early in the match, and then all you need is that one big move to win it at the end, and that's exactly what he did there. Really exciting. Really great finish to a match. I'm glad I ended up catching the replay.
Yeah, I would say don't feel bad if you were confused, because I think it was a confusing moment even for people who follow wrestling closely. And it was a confusing moment even if you are yourself an Olympic wrestler, because yeah. Kyle Dake seemed as confused as anybody as they were going through that first review. So don't sweat it. But yeah, so if you miss it, you'll have a couple more chances. Again, 3 American wrestlers tomorrow, one in the finals, Kennedy Blades, one going for bronze, Kyle Snyder. And I will say, I had mentioned yesterday that it seemed like it was a really successful Olympics for the wrestling team. They are now up to 6 medals with those chances tomorrow. However, it's the women who've been winning gold. And mm-hmm. I did see the note today that this is the first time in 56 years that no U.S. man won a gold medal in freestyle. So still have a chance to walk out of there with 8. Well, they're guaranteed 7. And then if Snyder wins, that'll be 8. And Zane Rutherford, you know, he's got to come back from the repechage. But a decent chance at 8, maybe 9. But no golds in men's freestyle is a step backwards, and that'll be a tough one for them to swallow.
Wow. Anything else before we move on to the preview?
I can just say very briefly, watched the women's climbing today, and Brooke Roubetoux, she took a silver, and you know, I don't have to say much more about the lead in Boulder. I feel the same way as I did yesterday. It was a very fun watch, but it was cool. She lost to Garnbret from Slovenia. Sorry, I don't have her first name, but she was also the winner in Tokyo. So back-to-back golds. I think Brooke Roubetoux, people knew, was a medal contender, but I think everyone was expecting a repeat. That was the sense that I got. It's fun. Like, that sport, you talked about the graphic showing you how high up they right. have to get. And it's very funny. In most sports, there's that moment when people realize that they've won, and they often get very emotional. And the climbing is a fascinating sport because sometimes that happens while they are hanging onto the wall. And so you can't put your hands over your heads. You can't cry. You have to focus. I mean, they're harnessed in, so there's no danger. But it's just right. funny that there are these other sports where they let out this burst of emotion. And then there's climbing where they realize they've medaled, but they are still attached to the wall and they have to continue climbing to get gold. Or sometimes they realize they've won gold and they're still up there. And I just thought that was a nice, amusing moment. But no, I think we can move on from there. I watched a little bit of the rhythmic gymnastics, the artistic swimming, the modern pentathlon. I tried to get in my last full day, do as much as I could. But if we're over time, I don't have to share notes on them. That's okay. We can move on.
Yeah, I watched those two and do not have takes. So we were free to move on. Should we hit on the Jordan Chiles news before we get to the preview? Because this was really interesting. If people haven't seen, so we talked Chiles in that, what was it, the Which apparatus was it? I'm drawing a blank.
It was the floor event. Which,
okay, cause, yes.
Because it was the event where Rebecca Andrade won gold, and then right. there was the photo on the podium of Simone Biles in silver and Chiles in bronze bowing down to her.
Correct. Okay, yes. So, yeah, so it was the floor exercise, and this is the one where Chiles had her score come in, and she was placed 5th, but then the coaches filed an appeal. I think they called it an inquiry in gymnastics, and the inquiry decided, yes, the score was incorrect. It was something to do with, I think they misjudged the difficulty of a particular skill that she had not performed, I think, in the qualifying and did perform in the final, so there was a discrepancy there. So they said, okay, yes, we misjudged the difficulty there. Therefore, your score is higher, and now you have enough points to move into 3rd place, and you win the bronze. And so the loser in that instance, the one who had been in third place and then was bumped all the way down to fifth, was a Romanian named Ana Barbosu, who then filed an appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, and that appeal was heard today, or was ruled on today, and they ruled that Childs, the inquiry was invalid, and that her original score should be her final score, because the challenge was filed outside of the 1 minute deadline that you have to submit a challenge. So now there's some questions about whether or not Childs will have to give back the bronze medal, because the Court of Arbitration for Sport says that's not our call. We'll leave it up to gymnastics, and then gymnastics says, "We'll leave it up to the IOC." So there's some questions there about whether Childs will get to keep that bronze. So there's more to come on this, but a really strange situation having her score downgraded after the fact.
Yeah, that domino effect of sort of passing the buck is interesting. And so I was reading, Tom Shad from USA Today had a good story explaining this. But yeah, it's interesting. I guess the Court of Arbitration for Sport makes the rulings on the inquiry, but they said that it's the International Gymnastics Federation's decision on what the actual rankings are. And so I think they updated their rankings to put Childs yes. in fifth. But then they said the rankings have Childs in fifth, but the IOC has to decide what to do about the medal. Because I think it's one thing to announce, well, actually, you're in fifth place. It's another thing to go to Jordan Childs and say, you must give us the medal back because we don't recognize you winning it anymore. This is a brutal situation that feels totally avoidable to me. And, you know, I was comparing it to the Vinesh Phogat situation, the wrestler, because this is now the second time in a few days that we have talked about sort of challenges and rules. And I was trying to think about, like, I want to be ideologically consistent. I don't want to just like let emotion sway me and feel one way in one event versus another, depending on who the people are that are involved. So I was thinking about it this way with Phogat, that I thought was a bad rule. The rule that because she missed weight the second day, she was then ineligible and should lose the silver that she had earned the day before. That I thought was a bad rule. The gymnastics, I understand that there is a rule. The problem is I don't know how it ever got to this point, because I guess there's an inquiry made and you've got to make an inquiry within a minute, and she made it in longer than that time. Like, okay, I don't know gymnastics well enough to know if a minute is a good amount of time, but I can certainly understand and support the fact that there's a rule, you got to get it in this time limit or else it doesn't hold up. The issue to me is with the application of the rule, because if they put in the inquiry, you would think they have like a checklist of things, and they say they are making an inquiry and we will run through this list of things to see if we agree with the inquiry. And you would think the first thing on that list should be, did they make this challenge in time? Because if that is not the case, then they could have ended this right then and they could have said, we're sorry, you know, you did not get your challenge in time. But to instead reverse it and then possibly reverse it again over a timing issue, to me, is just a terrible situation with the application of rules. And again, it's like, taking the medal away from her at this point would be awful after we had that viral moment and you let her have the medal and do the medal ceremony. And it's been days where she's been walking around with this medal and I don't know if she's still there. Some people could have flown home. Some people like shoot TV commercials right away as Olympic medalists. And so it's just like a total mess. And for me, it's just, I don't understand how when someone makes an inquiry and you agree in the moment, okay, we're going to change the score, you're not also thinking about, like, did it come in the right amount of time? That just feels like a total mess and a disaster, an unforced error by the people whose job it is in live time to decide whether to make that change in the first place.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think you hit it on the head there because, yeah, like, if the challenge is invalid, then the challenge is invalid and don't move forward with it. And I'd be curious to see, I haven't seen in any of the reporting when the challenge was made, whether, you know, if you get a minute, was it made after a minute and 10 seconds or was it made after 5 minutes? Because there's a difference there too, right?
So I saw on Twitter, I forget who it was, I saw it was like a minute and 4 seconds, I think. Like, okay, which is, I know, off. I want to double check. Terrible, like, heartbreaking how close that is.
Yeah.
But they should know. No, that when they're making the assessment, they should know immediately whether it was put in time or not.
Yeah, I think you're right. We're not gymnastics experts. I think still a minute seems really, really quick to make that call. Because, like, you know, what if you have trouble getting the, you know, the metaphorical challenge flag out of your sock? You know, it's really, really quick to have to make that decision. I think that's something they should look at.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the right time. Like you said, a minute. It's one of those things where sometimes a minute seems really fast, and sometimes a minute can feel like a lifetime.
Yeah.
You know, they got it in a minute four. I think that was the time. I'll look that up later and assume it's a minute four, because if it's not, we're going to just cut this from the podcast.
Okay. All right. Well, so I guess we'll move on to what's on deck tomorrow, because there's really not that much of it. It's a, you know, like they have to clear the way for the closing ceremony. So the last event starts at 9:30 a.m. Eastern. So wake up early, get everything done early. You know, it's only, I think, 11 medal events. So, you know, we're closing here on we're kind of easing into the post-Olympics life. It starts off with the women's marathon at 2 a.m. Eastern. Traditionally, that last event of the athletics portion, as they call it, has gone to the men, but this is the women's marathon will be the closing, the traditional closing event for the first time in history, even though there are events after it, but this is the traditional closing event. We saw, obviously, it's a tough course. You had a few men who did not finish today, but the runner to watch out for here is Perez Jepchirchir of Kenya. She's the world record holder. She set the world record in April at the London Marathon. So she's in there. She'll be the favorite. Curious to see if she's able to win that, because, you know, it, like, even if you're a world record holder, you know, every course is different. Everything can test you differently. So we'll see how she holds up against a really talented field, but definitely the favorite and a name to look out for as you're checking that leaderboard when you wake up in the morning.
Yeah, well, I am not going to go in chronological order. I'm going to jump right to the big event that I'm looking forward to tomorrow, and that is the women's basketball gold medal game. So it's U.S.-France again, the same final matchup in both men's and women's. So France will be looking for revenge on behalf of the men's team. But good luck, because Team USA's women's basketball team, as we've talked about at length, they are a dynasty. They are going for their eighth straight Olympic gold medal. This team has won 60 straight games in the Olympics. They have not lost an Olympic game since Barcelona 1992. And not only have they won seven straight golds, the average margin of victory in the last seven gold medal games is 23 points. They are stacked. We've named the players on their team a bunch. They are very good. But you never know. It's France in front of their home fans, and we'll see if they give them a run and keep it close and give them a scare. But the U.S. is heavily favored, and it'll be fun to see how this game plays out. And so that one is one of the last events of the day. It's at 9:30 a.m. Eastern.
I can't believe you calculated that margin of victory stat, because I did the exact same thing. That's also in my notes. I guess we're mind melding here as we close out these 2 weeks podcasting.
Nice.
The other big USA women's match is the women's volleyball gold medal match against Italy, 7 a.m. Eastern. The U.S. is seeking to repeat as champs. That's something that a few teams have done before. I think Brazil did it most recently in 2012 and 2016. But Italy is the current world number one, but they've never medaled before in the Olympics. So interesting, you know, it'd be great for them if their first gold, if their first medal in women's volleyball is a gold. But yeah, they're gonna, obviously a tough test for the U.S. being the number one team in the world. But U.S. again, the reigning gold medalists.
All right, I'll do the wrestling, and I mentioned this just a bit ago. The wrestling starts at 5 a.m., and I can't give exact times because it's like the tennis where they just have, you know, there's one mat, and they're just going to have a bunch of matches in a row, and so the time that yours starts depends on how fast everything before you goes, and they have medal ceremonies and everything. But anyway, the two medal bouts, it'll be the 11th match of the session is going to be that Kyle Snyder going for bronze. And then the 15th and final one, the last wrestling match of the whole tournament, will be Kennedy Blades going for gold. But if you are up early for 5 a.m. Eastern, I mentioned Zane Rutherford is alive in the repechage. So I think he has to win. He has the second match. And then I believe if he wins that, he'll be in a bronze medal bout after that. So we'll see at least three U.S. wrestling matches if you're tuned in throughout the morning.
Quick note on the women's weightlifting. So we had the men's heavyweight today. I talked yesterday how there was a clear favorite, a world record holder on the men's side. It was Lasha Talikhaje of Georgia. He did end up winning. So there's a similar situation here with the women's heavyweight weightlifting. Li Wenwen of China, she holds every world, Olympic, and world junior record. Her record in the snatch is 326 pounds and 412 pounds in the clean and jerk. She's in the field, obviously, going to be, you know, heavy gold medal favorite there. Her nickname is Big Baby, presumably not after the former LSU and Celtics player Glenn Davis. And also, she sleeps on the floor when she travels because she finds hotel beds too soft. So she may very well become, as far as I know, the only Olympic gold medalist to have slept on the floor the night before.
I bet she's not the first. I bet someone else has done that. But you're probably okay. Right that nowadays, you know, who knows what life was like in 1904.
Sure.
But yeah, I'm sure it's not common now. All right, let's talk water polo. And you know what? I should mention, I don't think we mentioned this earlier in the show. The U.S. women's water polo team lost today.
They lost.
They were in the bronze medal match, and they lost to the Netherlands 11-10. And I think the winning goal was scored with like a second left. So this is a team that we had talked about. They won three straight gold medals. They won a bunch of world championships. And they lost three games in these Olympics. They lost one in group play. They lost the semifinals, and then they lost the bronze medal match. So I think they had won a medal in six straight Olympics and now home empty-handed. So with them empty-handed, the U.S. men's water polo team is playing for a bronze medal. This game's against Hungary at 4:35 a.m. Eastern. This team has not won an Olympic medal since 2008 when they got a silver. So this will be a huge step for them to see if they can win a medal for the first time in 16 years.
And then at 7:30 Eastern, it's the men's gold medal handball match. That's Germany against Denmark. Germany has not won men's gold since 1936. That's the only time that was the first time that handball was in the Olympics, and that it was on a long hiatus after that. They didn't bring it back till 1972. So Germany has a chance to win a very rare gold medal in that one. The bronze medal is at 3:30 a.m. That's Spain and Slovenia.
And then we're getting down to the end of the list. I have a couple small things. I mean, if you're interested, I could have mentioned the bronze medal women's basketball game is between Belgium and Australia at 5:30 a.m. But now we're getting into the real minutia, and anyone who's watching all of this stuff probably has the schedule in front of them anyway. So is there anything else you want to mention before we just talk to the closing ceremony? My God, can you believe that's tomorrow?
There's the women's modern pentathlon, the last pentathlon to involve horses. That's at 5 a.m. And then my notes say, also some track cycling. I did not get into the details on that. There's several races. We talked about how we can't really get up for the track cycling, but they're doing it.
Yeah, I think track cycling and modern pentathlon are the only sports that have and I guess wrestling. Those three are the only three that have heats and not just medal events. They're going to go through the whole brackets and some of the prelims. I believe the U.S. does not have anyone who qualified for the modern pentathlon semifinals and finals. I believe that's the case. So, and then it's the closing ceremony. Closing ceremony is going to be at the Stade de France, where they had both the track and field and the rugby. And I think, you know, we were sort of deprived of the classic opening ceremony in the stadium because they did it on the Seine instead with the boats, which was cool and people liked it. But now it'll be sort of that classic closing ceremony, and the athletes will be parading and they'll have musical guests. And I think you and I might be podcasting during the closing ceremony, so I don't know how much we'll catch. But we're going to do, I think we said this yesterday, we've got two more episodes left in us. We're going to do our typical day 16 recap. Might be a little shorter because there's not as much going on. And then we're going to do one more episode to wrap up the whole thing. And I think we'll talk about, we'll touch on every sport quickly. We'll hit our favorite moments. And I said this earlier in the episode, but feel free, send us stuff if you've got things that we did not talk about or that you want to make sure we have on our radar. This is your last chance to get to us before we tape the finale. So send us those emails or social media or however you want to find us. But thanks again, everybody, for joining us. And we'll do two more fun shows after we wrap these things up.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. A great way to end it. I'm really looking forward to it.